Today is Monday, January 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, threats and rhetoric between the U.S. and Iran intensify.
I'm gravely concerned that they are misleading the American people.
Residents describe the horror of out-of-control bushfires in Australia.
The wind was howling. The wind was created by the... It was a strong wind all day, but the fire just created its own wind. It was just horrific.
Also ahead, Billie Eilish now being seen as a fashion trendsetter. It's all on today's International Edition. The blowback over the U.S. killing of a top Iranian general mounted Sunday as Iran announced it will no longer abide by the limits contained in the 2015 nuclear deal, and Iraq's parliament called for the expulsion of all American troops from Iraqi soil. The twin developments could bring Iran closer to building an atomic bomb and enable the Islamic State group to stage a comeback in Iraq, making the Middle East a far more dangerous and unstable place. Despite concerns of destabilizing an already volatile region, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told ABC's This Week that Soleimani was a dangerous man and the actions were warranted.
President Trump made the right decision to stop Qasem Soleimani from the terror campaign that he'd been engaged in against America not only 5 years ago and 10 years ago, but on December 27th when American was killed by Khatib Hezbollah at the orchestrated direction of Qasem Soleimani, and to prevent the future plans that the terrorist Soleimani had in front of him.
Iranian state television cited a statement by President Hassan Rouhani's administration saying the country would not observe the deal's restriction on fuel enrichment as far as uranium, on the size of its enriched uranium stockpile, and on its research and development activities. VOA's Jim Bertel asks national security correspondent Jeff Selden why the U.S. felt the need to take out Qasem Soleimani now.
U.S. officials are saying that they had no choice. The U.S. said it had to do it to protect American lives. They were worried about plots against U.S. military personnel, diplomats in the region, but this has touched off what could be a firestorm. There have been calls for revenge from Iran, from its proxies, and President Trump on social media on Twitter has said if Iran responds, the U.S. will strike fast, strike hard, and so the rhetoric has been ratcheted up, the tensions have been ratcheted up, and now it remains to be seen how this will play out, with lots of onlookers wondering if somehow both the U.S. and Iran will be able to avoid all-out war.
Well, you made the comment that Iran has vowed revenge. In talking to your sources, what do they think possibilities are?
Senior defense officials very much expect Iran to respond at some point militarily. They are most concerned right now about threats to U.S. military personnel in the region and to U.S. diplomatic personnel in the region. Those were the plots that they say Quds Force Commander Qasem Soleimani was on his way to talk about with the supreme leader of Iran as he headed back to Tehran. He never made it. They're hopeful that some of those plots have been disrupted, but they're worried that others could be put into action. It's one of the reasons the U.S. has sent about 3,000 additional troops to the region to help boost force protection. The U.S. has also suspended one of its primary missions in Iraq and Syria, and that is going after and helping local forces, whether the Iraqis or the Syrians, go after Islamic State terrorists who are in the middle of an ascending insurgency. So there's a lot of concern that U.S. forces could come under attack, but they also worry, intelligence officials long have worried, that Iran has a terror network at its disposal. It's been able to strike in places as far away as Buenos Aires, Argentina, in South America. It's been able to pull off plots in Bulgaria. So it has a long reach, and it can strike the U.S. in ways which are not necessarily easy to defend against.
What are your sources saying about the likelihood of a military strike as opposed to a cyber attack?
U.S. intelligence officials and defense officials are worried about both. The Department of Homeland Security put out an update saying there are no clear or visible threats currently against the U.S. homeland, but they warned that people in the U.S., companies, municipalities, anybody who's involved with infrastructure, with electricity, utilities, they need to be worried that Iran may try to strike. There are a couple of Iranian cyber actors out there over the past couple of years that have gone after personal data and other information from Western telecom companies, from Western travel agencies. So there's a fear Iran might be able to pull something off. There's already been one attack that's been claimed by actors who say they are linked to Iran. U.S. officials tell me that that's not conclusive yet, But again, they say everyone needs to have their security measures in place, have their defenses up, and be ready to respond.
Now, the attack took place in Iraq. Earlier today, the parliament passed a resolution demanding that all foreign forces be removed from the country. How is this going to impact U.S. force deployment?
It could have an impact. Look, Iraq is an important base there. Al-Assad Air Base in Iraq is key for U.S. efforts in the region, both in Iraq and in Syria. In fact, President Trump, when he said he was going to pull out troops from Syria, and about half of the 2,000 troops, perhaps more, who were in Syria to fight the Islamic State and help in that fight have been pulled out, he pointed to Al-Assad as a reason that could be done. So clearly it's concerning. The U.S. does have decent ties, decent relationship with the Kurdish regional government in Iraq, not the Syrian Kurds, but the Iraqi Kurds. So perhaps that gives the U.S. some leeway to continue to operate in Iraq, even if the Iraqi government as a whole has said you need to go. This is just the Iraqi parliament voting on this. It's one step, but clearly it makes some of the U.S. efforts in the region more difficult.
U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo has been making the rounds of the morning talk shows. Has he been trying to defuse the situation, or is he adding more rhetoric?
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has defended the move to launch the airstrike, take out Quds Force Commander Qasem Soleimani. He says anyone who saw any of the intelligence that he and the president saw would have come to the same conclusion, that it would have been irresponsible not to do that and to increase the risk of an attack against U.S. diplomats and U.S. troops in the region. But he's emphasized some of the rhetoric that came from President Trump. President Trump Saturday tweeting that if the Iranians decide to strike and even strike at an American or an American asset, the U.S. will come back and hit Iran fast, hit it hard, and that the U.S. has 52 sites already picked out that it will strike, sites that are culturally important to Iran.
All right, that was VOA's Jeff Selden speaking with VOA's Jim Bertel. The United States airstrike that killed Iranian Quds Force Commander General Qasem Soleimani has divided U.S. lawmakers along party lines. President Donald Trump ordered Thursday's strike following angry protests by supporters of an Iranian-backed militia at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. The president's order drew praise from congressional Republicans, but Democrats said it could have serious consequences on stability in the Middle East. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
Intense worldwide reaction to the death of Qasem Soleimani, who was killed in a U.S. airstrike. The attack ordered by President Trump sparked fierce political debate on the campaign trail and on Capitol Hill. The move praised by Republicans.
For too long, this evil man operated without constraint, and countless innocents have suffered for it. Now his terrorist leadership has been ended.
Some leading Republicans tweeting their support for a decision the Pentagon said was necessary to prevent imminent attacks planned against U.S. diplomats and service members. Trump's move coming after pro-Iranian protesters surrounded the U.S. embassy in Baghdad.
I think it was a matter of them saying we can respond proportionally in kind, or we can take this one window we have when our authorities are in place to really take out the main bad actor on the battlefield.
But Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi said the president carried out the strike without congressional authorization, a concern shared by her Senate counterpart.
The need for advanced consultation and transparency with Congress was put in the Constitution for a reason, because the lack of advanced consultation and transparency with Congress can lead to hasty and ill-considered decisions.
The strike leading to a renewed effort on Capitol Hill to assert congressional authority over military actions, although the administration did have the right to act on its own, argues one analyst.
The administration undertook an effort to designate Qasem Soleimani as a foreign terrorist, and in doing so, that extends counterterrorism authorities to his person. So the administration did have the authority to strike Qasem Soleimani.
The broader impact of the airstrike concerned Democrats running to unseat Trump in the next election.
Unfortunately, nothing we have seen from this administration over the past 3 years suggest that they are prepared to deal with the very real risk we now confront.
Another contender for the Democratic presidential nomination, Senator Bernie Sanders, arguing the strike violates Trump's own campaign promise.
Trump promised to end endless wars. Tragically, his actions now put us on the path to another war.
Well, former intelligence officer and former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg said the threat of escalation from Iran was very real.
This is one of the most provocative things, short of an outright invasion, that the U.S. can do with respect to Iran.
U.S. senators set to receive a classified briefing on the airstrike next week. McConnell urging restraint until then.
Predictably enough, in this political environment, the operation that led to Soleimani's death may prove controversial or divisive. Although I anticipate and welcome a debate about America's interest in foreign policy in the Middle East, I recommend that all senators wait to review the facts and hear from the administration before passing much public judgment on this operation and its potential consequences.
But Senator Tim Kaine has already announced he will introduce legislation forcing a vote on further U.S. military actions in Iran, stretching lawmakers' debate over the issue out for many weeks ahead. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Nicolas Maduro backers staged a takeover of Venezuela's legislature. UNICEF is appealing to Syria's warring parties to protect children from carnage in Idlib. The death toll from an airstrike in Libya kills 30 people. And the stars hit the red carpet at the Golden Globe ceremony. It's all on today's International Edition. Somali militant group Al-Shabaab says it attacked a military base used by U.S. and Kenyan military teams Sunday. The U.S. military command AFRICOM confirmed damage of equipment in the terror attack, and the situation remained tense. The joint Kenya and U.S. military installation is situated in Lamu County along Kenya-Somalia's border. For VOA, Mohamed Youssef reports.
A cloud of black smoke will be seen rising from a military base in the coastal town of Lamu. The base hosts Kenya and American forces. Somali Islamist group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the Sunday attack. In a statement, the U.S. military command in Africa, known as AFRICOM, confirmed some of the smoke could have originated from the destruction of equipment at the base. Lamu County Commissioner Irungu Masharia confirmed the attack and says the area is not yet secured.
Between 4 and 5, there was that attack at that military base, that airstrip. Officers engaged the intruders, and it has continued until around 6. But the situation has now calmed down, but the area is still not secure for us to go to that place. But life has returned to normal. Our officers are on the ground.
In a statement, Al-Shabaab said it had taken control of part of the camp and it had inflicted casualties in the attack. Kenya Defense Forces also said in a statement they fought off the attackers and 4 militants were killed. One witness, who didn't want to be named for fear of reprisal, spoke to VOA about how he was woken up by explosions, followed by hours of gunfire sound. We had heavy explosions at around 4, he said. In the beginning, we thought these were the usual explosions we hear around the area. Then we saw a fire and thick black smoke. Then, for a while, it was quiet, at around 6. Then we had gun attacks up to 8. It was at that time we saw a plane dropping something that looked like bombs. Witnesses told VOA there was still a heavy security presence in and around the area. Security officers could be seen asking some civilians to produce their identification documents. Richard Tuta, a security expert based in Nairobi, says Al-Shabaab are seeking recognition as U.S.-Iranian tension grows after the U.S. airstrike that killed the Iranian Quds Force commander, General Qasem Soleimani.
They are aware that currently focus is on retaliatory attack as a result of what happened in Baghdad. So to them, this is an opportunity for them also to rebrand themselves internationally. That's why, despite the fact that they knew very well that they were going to lose, but they had to do it in order to rebrand themselves internationally.
The attack comes days after Al-Shabaab fighters killed three people on a passenger bus in Lamu County. The area that borders Somalia has been the target of security operations for the last 5 years. Al-Shabaab has carried out wave of attacks against Kenyan security forces and civilians in the coast and northeastern region. Mohammed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Well, mudslides and power blackouts hampered the search for people missing in massive flooding in Indonesia's capital, where more than 60 people have died and some tens of thousands of evacuees are living in damp and cramped emergency shelters. VOA's Latika Hoke has more on what has been the worst flooding in the area since 2007.
Floods submerged entire neighborhoods in western Java. Residents of villages south of Jakarta have been using inflatable boats to reach one another. Torrential monsoon rains began on the last day of December, causing the local rivers to overflow and flood communities in the greater Jakarta area. The floods caused landslides in the hilly areas on the outskirts of the capital. Eyewitnesses say the water levels rose very quickly.
At about 8 in the morning, we could see the waters of the Sakia River begin to overflow. Not much water initially, but within about 15 minutes, it kept getting higher and higher, and it flooded the many cars and motorbikes parked along the banks.
Several hundred thousand people took refuge in shelters, and many were still unable to return home on Sunday. Police used helicopters to deliver food and clean water to the shelters. The authorities have dispatched sanitation crews to spray Indonesia's capital with disinfectant to prevent the spread of waterborne diseases. Indonesian President Joko Widodo has said the safety of the people is a priority.
The Disaster Mitigation Agency, leaders of the provinces, search and rescue teams need to move as one to give people who were affected by the floods a sense of safety.
The president was not able to visit residents of the hardest hit areas on Sunday, as his helicopter did not have a place to land. Some people began to clean up their homes where the water receded.
Fortunately, I was not here when the floods came. I was in a village not far from here. As for the water level, the floods submerged the entire house.
Monsoon floods hit Jakarta every year, making it one of the fastest sinking cities in the world. But officials say this year has been particularly bad, forcing a record number of people to seek shelter. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
The cooling temperatures and calmer winds Sunday brought some relief to Australian communities raked by wildfires, but the heat remains. And Prime Minister Scott Morrison is now accepting responsibility for the crisis and taking more action. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
It was just ferocious.
John Stanton had to flee his home on Kangaroo Island.
Suddenly embers were coming over, but hundreds of embers just fast, just flying through the air. We decided we weren't going to defend, and we probably made a good decision.
A cool drizzle Sunday offered something of a reprieve. New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons.
It's psychological relief, if nothing else, for all the communities being affected by these fires. But unfortunately, it's not putting out the fires.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
The crisis is not over. There are months to go.
As for the criticism that he's been slow to act.
I can't be distracted by that.
I'm Ben Thomas.
Well, Illinois, the largest Midwestern state in the United States, is beginning in 2020 with the implementation of a new law that allows people to legally buy marijuana for recreational use. The Cannabis Regulation and Tax Act also allows the governor to pardon thousands for past low-level cannabis convictions. VOA's Mariano Diallo reports.
If you are 21 and older, you can now legally buy marijuana in the state of Illinois. Some stores in Chicago opened at the crack of dawn.
Getting up at 6 a.m. is so that I can remember and have documented footage that I was a part of this shift in awareness and cultural acceptance of marijuana. So it's an amazing thing to not only have the access to it, but to be knowledgeable about what I'm consuming.
Resident Jackie Ryan says she's been a regular cannabis user for many years and couldn't be happier.
I think this is groundbreaking. Finally, Illinois is following suit with other states, and it's just really exciting.
Illinois' governor granted about 11,000 pardons for people with low-level cannabis convictions, the first round of a planned total of more than 700,000. Abigail Watkins works for Dispensary 33, one of the cannabis news stores.
We're the biggest city in the Midwest, and now we have recreational cannabis, and we're, you know, just like fighting the stigma and hoping to have like reparations for all these people that have been like negatively impacted and like disproportionately affected by the war on drugs and like the criminalization of cannabis.
Illinois is the 11th state to legalize the substance along with Washington, D.C. 34 states and the nation's capital allow medical cannabis treatment, but the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration still considers marijuana a dangerous substance alongside LSD and heroin. Customer Brian Butler.
I think eventually the whole country will be legal. Hopefully, we are moving to Canada.
A recent study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that states that legalized recreational marijuana see a reduction of at least 20% in fatalities linked to opioid overdoses. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
And you're listening to International Edition. We will be back in a minute.
Voices. We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams-Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, canine units are fairly common in most police departments. These dogs usually help solve crimes and find drugs, but the Fairfax Police Department in Virginia has brought dogs on board to crime fighters deal with to help crime fighters deal with and recover from those difficult jobs. Maxim Moskalkovov met with members of the canine squad, and Anna Rice narrates the story.
This handsome guy named Jack started his job with the Fairfax Police Department just recently, but has already won a lot of hearts.
Out. Good boy.
Jack still has a few months of training ahead of him before he can start on his job. But Jack and his four-legged colleagues won't be looking for traces of drugs, explosives, or lost people. He will be helping police officers overcome stress and get over traumatic emotional experiences. A special organization called First Responders K9 trains such dogs.
First Responder K9 trains and provides service dogs to first responders by first responders that may have been wounded in the line of service. So mobility issues, PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and so on.
The idea to employ dogs to help deal with extreme stress is not new, yet the First Responders K9 is the only organization of its kind in the U.S. Among those who help train dogs are policemen, firefighters, and paramedics.
Right now, as we start to focus that training, it's focused towards disabilities. So the dogs being able to open up doors, the dogs being able to press the handicap little sign so the doors will open, dogs being able to grab items for the owners.
Currently, five dogs are being trained here, each named after an officer who had died in the line of duty. After the training is over, Jack and Holmes will work with officers to help prevent the development of PTSD. And Indy, Sally, and Lenny will help those who had already lived through severe physical or psychological trauma. Head of the Fairfax County Police Department, Edwin Rossler, is among them.
It's been a blessing because I am learning not only from my trainer, Caitlin, and my canine Indy, but everybody else to become a more patient human being. I started to bring Indy into the office and be with her 24/7. People on my floor and in the building where there are other dogs, it has become a happy place.
According to an NGO called Blue Help, in 2018, the number of policemen who had committed suicide has exceeded the number of those who died in the line of duty.
What a lot of people don't realize is that when the police are called, it's not because someone's having a very good day. It's usually because they're having the worst day of their life or they're having a very bad day. And that's the big reason why we decided to implement this program. During a 10-hour shift or a 12-hour shift, we have to see the worst side of a lot of people. And we have to take what's going on at one moment and kind of change our face and go to the next call and pretend like that never happened.
Training a dog is a lot of work and may take up to 2 years. Labrador Retrievers and Golden Retrievers are chosen for the job because they're incredibly calm and among the smartest dog breeds.
Now she's working a lot with behavioral stuff, how to say hello to people, how to interact in public, in large groups, how to socialize with other people and other animals.
First Responders K-9 plans to start working with other police departments around the country. For Maxim Moskalkov in Fairfax, Virginia, NRI's VOA News.
My Lucifer is lonely.
Billie Eilish shot up to fame with musical awards, hit songs, millions of records sold, but now she's being given the admiration of imitation. Her baggy clothes that often make a statement about her concerns for animals, environment, and climate change are inspiring a new line of fashion by international clothing stores H&M. The fashion brand will be making these clothes with sustainable materials and emulating Eilish's baggy clothes style with a message of sustainability.
As enemies, and once the water starts to rise, and heaven's out of sight.
You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a lovely day.
You know I'm not your friend without some greenery. Walking wearing feathers, Peter should know better. Your cover-up is caving in. Man is such a fool, why are we saving him? Poisoning themselves now, begging for our help. Wow, hills burn in California. My turn to ignore you. Don't say I didn't want you. All the good girls go to hell, 'cause even God herself has enemies. And once the water starts to rise and heaven's out of sight, she'll want the devil on her team. My Lucifer is lonely. White shirt, now red, my bloody nose sleeping. You're on your tippy toes creeping around like no one knows. Think you're so criminal. Bruises on both my knees for you. Don't say thank you. Oh, please, I do what I want when I'm wanting to. My soul, so cynical. So you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type. Make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy. Duh. She'll pity the men I know.
you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type.